This Sunday. Side by side at the microphone, from the green light to the speed trap, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino calls them as they sees them, and you better believe them. Here! Relevant news, biased opinions, and outright bullshit regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! But mechanical trickery never before revealed over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrills the explosive tension as Chris and Ray cuss each other down the track and barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil! All that and much more this Sunday at high noon on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and live feed, Chris Switzer and Ray Garino. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free. Every Sunday at noon on WHPC. Take the Long Island Expressway to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the sign saying no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass. Sunday!
If you're gathering around San Antonio, you made a left somewhere and went way too far to the west because you've actually landed in Garden City, where you've tuned in Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show, with your hosts Ray Guarino and Chris Switzer. How are you, Chris?
Pretty good, Ray. And you know, we read all your cards and letters, and we read all your emails, and we regret to inform you that this show is still going on.
Yeah, we're keeping it tough. We're standing guard, doing like we always do, and whether you like it or not. Sorry.
Whether you like it or not, exactly. For all the automotive advice for people that don't need automotive advice, we're here for you at Motormouth Radio.
Yeah. Sometimes we give ourselves automotive advice, and
yes,
that's really scary.
Yeah, and we got a good show today. We're having a very exciting.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to be, who are we chatting with?
You know,
it's a good show. What are we doing?
And sometimes what happens is guests are a little elusive. It's hard to get people. And listen, people that we petition, you know, they run shops, they run businesses. Some of them have TV shows, like today's guest. We are we're on par to have Mr. Dan Short from Phantom Works, that TV show that was on. Well, you know, it bounced around like the networks do. It was last on, I guess, Motor Trend, but I think it was on Velocity before that.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally love the show, and I still watch it in reruns. I really like watching it. A lot of people say the same thing. They felt it had a realism to it, an approach that was, you know, every show has a little bit of drama. There's always something that goes on, but it wasn't overdone. It wasn't Tuttle drama, if you will. You know, it wasn't like, American Chopper.
It was,
you know, there is drama in shops. Guys throw tools at each other sometimes. Guys yell across the bay. There's, you know, hey, who took my screwdriver? That's why the tool companies sell, you know, orange, red, blue, green, yellow tools, so you can say, hey, that's mine, that's not yours. So, Dan, I've been trying to get Dan back on. He's been on the show in the past. We were trying to get him back on, and now we finally put it together for today, so he should be at around the bottom of the hour. And if you want to, Dan should be coming in on our other backdoor link, which means you can speak with him if you call 516-572-7440.
That's right. 516-572-7440. You can call us, right?
You can talk to us before that if you'd like. If you really want to daredevil, if you really think you're Super Dave, yeah, give us a call. We'll talk to you.
Let me tell you, let's talk about minutiae, automotive minutiae for a minute. I want to bring this up, okay? Because you know how I like to do things really, really small. But anyway, you know when you're rolling up an extension cord, right? Mm-hmm. Day's done, you're taking the extension cord or the drop light with the cord or whatever have you, and you're rolling it up. And usually if it's a very, very long extension cord, you grab a hold of one end with your hand and you roll it around your elbow, right? And you make a nice bundle, and then with the last 6 or 8 feet of that, you wrap it up around the bundle and stuff the other end of the extension cord through the hole, and you hang it up, or you dispose of it properly, or put it away, or whatever you do with it. Well, I found in the last couple of years, I can't wrap an extension cord without hitting myself in the crotch with the end of it.
Oh, my God. That's I've never heard of that. I thought you could say hit yourself in the head.
No, here's the funny thing.
All right.
That's the truth. I'm wrapping the extension cord, and I'm aware of this. And all of a sudden, it's like, bah! It's like, oh, it's dirty old white. It's I always have to like dance around the garage to try and keep that end of the extension cord from clocking me in the right spot.
Wow. That's, how long has this been happening? Is this a new occurrence?
Years.
And you haven't learned yet to not do that.
I haven't changed my technique. No, here's the funny thing. Yesterday, I was running a whole bunch of extension cords. I had a whole bunch of them that were all just, I wanted to get them all in one place.
Yeah.
So I had them all out on the driveway, and I'm wrapping them all up, and I'm thinking to myself, you got to be cool. The neighbor's watching. You got to be
videoing.
So, gotta be cool about
TikTok
this.
TikTok is on.
Right. It's like, what? From someone else's window, it's like, watch this dumb neighbor hit himself right in the gonads. Watch this. No, and seriously, I'm rapping. I'm being very careful in the voice. And I was lucky. Did not hit myself once until the last extension cord. And I don't know what it did, but I swear to you, Ray, it came up and clocked me right in the glasses. Hit me right in the eye. And I was like, these are my different glasses. If I weren't wearing the glasses I had, you would have seen like me with a black eye doing this show. I was literally bang. It just hit me right in the face and knocked me back. And of course, I'm in the middle of the driveway.
Yeah.
So, someone saw me. Mm-hmm. Someone saw me clock myself in the head with an extension cord.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you just dropped the whole thing. You go, you know what? I'm done.
Yeah. One of our close listeners thinks you had too much caffeine today, by the way. I have a YouTube video saved. If I have it, I'll send it to you. I watched this guy who did something ingenious, and I think he called it an electrician's loop or something. But he said, listen, you've been rolling extension cords this way for all your life. I'm going to show you how to do it better and faster. With one pull, it all comes out. And he did this series of loops that he did it seamlessly, and he did it slowly, too. I haven't mastered it, but
One pull, it all comes out all the time.
Well, yeah. Well, what I have mastered is answering the phone. So,
okay. What about the extension cord?
No, we will go to the phones in the fun and say, hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
I think someone needs to have TomTom call more than me.
Hey.
Boy, he is tightly wound this morning. What's going on in there?
You know, and Bob, and you're not even a guy who sent me a message saying he thought Chris had too much caffeine.
Hey, Bob, how are you?
Gentlemen, good to hear you.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure. Come on, Bob. Did you ever do this? Did you ever wrap an extension cord and hit yourself in the wrong spot?
Only around the neck.
Oh, wow. That hurts, yeah.
So I wanted to say hi. Also, I'm going to go into cars, but I had a question for your guest today, who we've watched for years and enjoyed. It's a shame he's not on anymore. I wanted to ask him, what was his? I saw several Mustang shows. What was his favorite Mustang that he built? He did a 68. He did a couple 65 and 66s. He did a 69, 70 Boss. That's my question for your guest.
Okay, we'll see if we can get that in. I know he did one. I saw it about a week ago. I remember a client had two early Mustangs, two first gens. One was, I think, a convertible, but it was a six-cylinder car. And they got a V8 hardtop as a donor car and swapped the engine, transmission, the suspension for the five lugs. I mean, they really made the first car into the second car. That was a lot of work. That really was.
I can't even fathom putting that much work into a six. You're right. The brakes, the lugs, everything. You put a small block Ford in there, I guess 260 or 289.
Yeah.
So Anyway, that's my question to him. And tell him that we miss him.
Definitely we will, yes. And so, Chris, remember that question. Cause, I mean, thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
I wish you guys well.
Thanks, man. Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Be safe.
Bye-bye. All right, that was Bob from Rockville Center, of course. You see, right. A guy like Dan evokes that kind of conversation and question. More people than not that I talked to really liked his show and still like it. So, but, you know, like he told us after he ended the show and we had him on, he talked about how it was just such a grind. And I'm sure he'll cover that a little bit today, how it was just so much. It overcomes, you know, everything. Like, the show becomes the business and... You know, but the business is the business, so.
And sometimes the business is sacrifices because of the show, and sometimes you have to make that choice.
Right.
You have to say, well, my livelihood or entertainment, what's more valuable? And if you, those people that can make it work, make it work.
Right.
And totally understandable those who can't.
Right.
Not say can't. Those who feel it's their sanity is worth something.
Right. Right.
So we totally understand. Let's go. Exactly. It's call us 516-572-7440. That's the phone number to get a hold of us here at Motor Mouth Radio. Yeah. But yeah, it's I'm very anxious to speak with him about the show and about how life is treating him and what's going on and just knowing how to, catching up with an old friend.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. So
are you hitting yourself in the wrong place with anything this week or no?
No. I was actually, I learned how to, I took apart a Milwaukee, you know, battery-powered ratchet, which is very popular these days.
Right.
The fellow at the shop, Derek, had one that needed to be rebuilt. The head, you know, typically goes bad. And we sent it down to Macoman Brian.
Nice.
And he rebuilt it and sent it back. And there was a problem. Brian was helping me diagnose it. It looks like there was a piece missing. And I didn't remember this yesterday when I was talking to Brian. It's a little bushing that goes in between the piece that spins. It's called the crankshaft that actually moves the pawl. And, I don't think it was now. I honestly can't say. I don't think it was in there when it went down to Brian. Only because, you know, Derek had this thing apart. And I don't remember now knowing what that part is. I don't remember seeing it. So Brian's going to send me some pieces and we're going to, we were trying. It was funny. We were trying to diagnose this over the phone and I was measuring the pieces with my veneer caliper. And of course, you know, I'm giving him the measurements and then Brian searched around. He found a caliper of his own to take some measurements and, he's giving me measurements, and he goes, well, yeah, it's like, you know, 10 millimeters. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm using an American caliper. So, know what I got to convert? So,
see the good thing you guys weren't involved in the moonshot.
I'm
right?
telling you. Well, this was the workaround. I mean, you could convert, or, you know, the world moves to metric, I guess. I went and I took out a digital veneer metric American caliper that I have that I don't usually use, but I do have. And then I switched over to, you know, the metric measurement and saw that, we compared our notes. So we're going to get that squared away. But, yeah, you know, tool rebuilding, he does a lot of that with the pneumatic tools. Our good friend Ray, the fixer, did the same thing, built a lot of pneumatic tools for guys.
Okay.
And once you do them enough and you know the different manufacturers and brands, like, you know, Brian was saying with the stuff he does for Matco, he can do the pneumatic stuff with his eyes closed. It's, you know, Matco did it really, really nice where they made a lot of interchangeable parts. So that really helps. But the Milwaukee thing, I got a little education. You know, I got a, an education on how to do it. And I think if I was to find one in a pawn shop or something that was not working, I would probably take it upon myself to try and fix it. You know, we have to see.
That's great.
You know?
No, it's funny because rebuilding tools is a fascination I've always had. I mean, I love it. I try to do it with questionable success.
Right.
I have an electric a screw gun, a drill, and it won't go. It'll only go in one direction. It won't go in reverse. The switch seems to have malfunctioned in some way, and it's just a matter of taking it apart and figuring it out.
Well, I'll tell you, I've done a couple of those, and I've done some corded drills, and with those, it's, you know, it's one armature that just reverses. So
right,
but So it could be one of two. The first thing you do is you look for any kind of schmutz and gunk or whatever that might happen. Or maybe sometimes a wire falls off sometimes. You know,
that happened, yeah.
But with a voltmeter, you can check the continuity of that switch with a volt ohmmeter. And then when you pull a trigger, you can actually read voltage. And if the switch is good, a lot of times half of the armature just opens. And then, but the good tools, like I know I did a few DeWalt drills years ago for my buddy at work.
Right.
And DeWalt, most of the companies sell the parts. So he bought the armature and I said, good, get the bearings that go on the ends. Let's change those while we're there. And
sure.
I think for like, at the time, you know, maybe under $30-$40, he got those parts and, you know, the brushes were good. This was a brush drill. So they were good. And you know, we got the thing back and running again.
You know? Amazing. I love that. It's better than spending, you know, $200-$300 on another drill.
Yeah. Well, now the problem is, like, with the battery stuff, through the years, now it's starting to stabilize with lithium-ion stuff. But when we were using the NiCad stuff and whatever, I had this problem with the DeWalt drill. You know, the batteries eventually go bad. They won't charge.
Right.
And I said, I got a feeling these batteries are going to be expensive. And, yeah, they were. And I was right. I went back to Ace. I was able to buy another kit, the new version drill, that was smaller and more compact in your hand with two batteries and a charger for less than the batteries would have cost me as a replacement. You know? So now, of course, I have the old one still sitting there, the old drill with the bad batteries and a charger. And I hate to get rid of it because the drill works. So now they make,
what do you do with it?
They actually make conversion housings where you can take now a lithium ion battery and convert it to run in the newer. It is a bigger, like a shoe that it fits in. So it does make it a little bigger and a little clunkier depending on the manufacturer.
Right.
I was almost ready to pull a trigger on it last week, and I said, you know what? I've already now since bought another drill. And, like, you know, I really don't need this, but my mentality is I hate to get rid of a good drill.
I agree.
I got to.
You'll be moving
it
though.
I got to throw it out. I got
to
get rid of it.
It breaks my heart to throw out tools. It does. And right now I stumbled on, of course, coming from my father's stash, which I'm now looking through most of the stuff that came out of his garage. I found a Milwaukee battery operated drill and the charger and everything and two batteries. One battery is on its way out. Like it lasts an overnight and then it starts to go, so you have to recharge it again. But like it's falling under the same guise as what you're talking about now. It's a perfectly good drill. It works just fine. It's got two batteries. One is good. One is not so good.
Right.
And it's just a matter of time before they're both bad. And then what? Then I have a perfectly good drill with two bad batteries, like you said.
What type of batteries do you know? What version?
They're basically it's almost cylindrical type, and it slides into the handle.
That could be the lithium. Well, the newer ones are lithium ion. Does it say like M12 or M18 on it?
Oh, you really think I'm looking if I know which end of the battery to put into the?
Because that's the current Milwaukee stuff. The M12 is the 12 volt. M18 is obviously 18 volt, and they're all lithium ion. So those. Those batteries are not that bad to buy. I actually got one from Brian because I needed a spare, and I have that. I bought the Milwaukee little compressor, so you could go out. A lot of times, I got to put air in a tire on the street, and to loop my two air lines together and bring them all the way out to the thing is like, you know, forget about it. So instead, I answer the phone and I say,
"Okay,
I say hi, you're on the Motor Mouths. What's going on?"
Guys, how you doing? Chris and Ray, Cliff.
What's up, Cliff?
How's everything?
What's
good.
Up, Cliff?
I'm loving it. I'm listening to the talking, and I'm saying to myself, I don't even have a battery operated drill. I mean, I'm not using a drill that much. I have like this old heavy drill that my dad had. It's got to be from the 50s. Like, it's like electric drill. It's like 50 pounds to lift up, and it's really the power of a regular little, you know, house drill. But it's it kills your hands afterwards. But,
don't tell me. It's chrome, right? Cliff, it's chrome.
It is chrome. I'm going to send a picture to you guys later. It's this old, big, chrome, heavy, like, you know?
Beautiful.
But I do have a question for you. Know, it's so funny. I see whenever I go in, you know, you go to the tire shops, and now they're all using, you know, the battery-operated lug guns.
Yeah.
And
sure.
I kind of always, like, say to myself, I don't know, man. Like, I'm still, you know, I like to hear that, like, woo, you know, from the pneumatic guns, you know. And do you think that are they just as powerful, and do they make the lugs just as tight, or always got to give it that hand snug anyway after with a lug wrench?
Well,
what do you think?
I'll tell you this from working with them. at the shop, and I'll say this: I'm definitely a pneumatic guy. You get over wanting to hear that noise. And just as a side note, one day I told the story before. I was doing a brake job, and you typically use the air ratchet to take the caliper pins out. So I'm in there going with the air ratchet, and Mike Jr. came in the shop. He's like, "What the hell's that noise? Like, what noise? That noise I just heard. Like, what noise was that? I didn't hear a noise." He goes, "No, that noise. And it sounded like a drill. What are you doing?" And I picked the tool up, and I just went, beep, beep. I hit it. He goes, "Oh." He wasn't used to hearing an air, an air-powered ratchet. Everything now is battery-powered.
The young generation, right?
Yes. Yeah, so, well, now he knows. But, yes, I will say this. Like, he does have the big gun that we all used in the shop. It's a big snap-on half-inch. It's a brute. It is a absolute brute, and the thing is unbelievably powerful. But it's very heavy in your hand because, it's got the bigger the motor, the more power, and the batteries.
Got it.
But yeah, they do work. What's nice about that, even in the shop, I sometimes will use the pneumatic gun because it's lighter and smaller. But if you have to go outside, it's nice to take that battery gun with you. You don't have to drag an air hose,
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, very true.
They're expensive. Right, I'll give you this. They're up there in the hundreds of dollars. You know, you're going to pay maybe $600-$700 for one of those guns.
Wow.
Where a good pneumatic gun, you're going to pay for a 1600 breakaway foot pound pneumatic gun, you pay maybe $300 or $400. You know, so.
Yeah.
You know, there's still a premium on the electric, but it really is. It's nice when you're like, even when you're under the dash and you're dealing with, you need the air ratchet or something. You don't have a hose,
I guess you just got to get yourself in tune to being used to that stuff, right? I mean,
right.
I see the electric gun, and I'm like, is that really making a tire, putting those lug butts in, getting lug nuts in tight enough? And I guess they're doing a trick,
I'll tell you this, Cliff. My secret to that is if in a rare occasion I do have something done at someone, like especially with a tire at someone else's shop, as soon as I come home, I bust out my breaker bar and then my torque wrench, and I retorque because I found it way tight too many times.
No, and it's true, because God forbid you're on the side of a road and you just brought it out of the tire shop, whatever have you, and they zip that nut on there at thousands of pounds per square inch, and you have to get it off with a simple lug wrench. You can't do it.
So
it's always good to retorque them once you bring the car back home. I totally agree.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
No,
happy Sunday, guys, and it's always great talking to you.
Yep,
it's great as usual.
Pleasure, Cliff. Keep in touch. Talk to you soon.
Yes. Be safe, Cliff. Chris, thanks for calling. Man.
All right.
I'll talk to you soon, Al.
So long.
516-572-7440. You know, it's funny. Cliff mentioned that old drill. The only tool that I have that I will always use, that I will always favor the older model, are the buffing machines.
I knew you were going to say that.
I love those things. The weight is what helps you buff the car out. It's the weight of that thing.
And I'll
stuff when you're doing doors.
Well, I'll tell you something. Mike has them at the shop. He has the new battery powered ones, the new battery line, and they are so opposite. They're much smaller and lighter.
Really?
And I even said to him, I said, "Wow, Chris couldn't use this tool because Chris." And I understand the benefit of having that weight, but you're trained and you know how to use that weight. The newer guys know how to use the size. It's all a matter of what you're used to. And
it was always the case, compound's very slippery. And of course it gets everywhere, and it gets on the handle, and it gets on the back handle and the side handle of the buffing machine. And there have been times where that thing has gotten sent out of my hand and gone over the roof of the car. So at least you need the cord to follow where it went.
Back in the 80s, I bought my first house. I was buying some tools and went to Sears, cause Sears was still around and thriving, and I bought some, powered tools.
It's where America shops. Yes.
It was, at least. And I bought and have it in the basement somewhere. And I bought a half inch drill. Like Cliff was saying, it's got a top handle, a side handle, and it was like the last one they made with a metal body. I think it's like an aluminum body, but not chrome.
Yes.
But that thing is, and that's what you want to go through, like, rafters with, or floor joists, or, you could do, it's not a hammer drill, but you could even do some concrete stuff with it. It is a beast.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What have you used it on last?
I haven't used it in, let's see, I bought it like, 30 years ago? So I don't think I've used the thing since the early 90s. Because in the early 90s, I did get a Makita half-inch Chuck hammer drill, which is a lot slimmer and that thing's got a bunch of torque. And I also have a Milwaukee half inch drill, which is very, very torquey. So the Craftsman just sits. I haven't used it. That should be somebody needs to add that to their tool collection that needs to buy it from me because I have the original case. I got the book in there. I got the whole nine yards. And it's not, wasn't used a lot.
That's funny because I have one literally from my dad, and it's the reason why I never bought one of that massive size because I've always had that thing, and I always remember it my whole life. But it's, of course, it's stored very properly with the cord wrapped around it completely. There's no box. There's no instructions. Right. And the cord is like fraying at the end of it like the responsible way my father stored it. And it's been sitting that way ever since.
I'll tell you, I have a Metabo grinder, a 4-inch grinder, and the cord on, and that's what I used to dress welds and all. I use that a lot, and the cord started getting frayed, and so I took the back part of it apart. I said, no problem, I'll change the cord. No, I don't remember now what it was, but there was something that stopped me and made me put it back together. The way that they did this, it's like you got to go really inside the tool, deeper than I was comfortable going at the time. So I actually asked Brian if he, has a place that he could send it out to. And maybe,
Yeah, I actually have a Metabo grinder floating around the house somewhere, too. I can't tell you anything about it. I used to use it as a buffer, and I couldn't use it as a buffer because it was only like one speed.
Right.
It wasn't a variable speed, and sometimes you need that. But I was trying it because it was light.
Right.
And I wasn't using it as a grinder. I adapted the head of it as a buffer, and it worked out pretty well. But
tell you what you got to do now.
It was all fast. Yes.
You got to tell us if we have our group of the hour, because Dan Short is ready to come in shortly in a few minutes, and I said, okay, we'll take our break. So what do you got?
Sounds good. Well, of course, we have the Motormouth Radio on a group of the hour. If you have a car part on your shelf that you have no clue what it's for. So, is it really for the car that you had last week, last year, last generation? Which car does that bracket go to? Those rims, they came off of something? I have no clue. Well, if you have enough parts lying around to build another car and can't remember which parts came from where or how you acquired them in the first place, then you are part of the Motormouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour.
There you go. Nice. I tell you what, we got a song to come out to our break, and it's dedicated to our two buddies, Brian and Macho Man Brian and Chassis John, two guys that were living the bachelor life for the last week because their wives and John's kids, Brian's kids, were down away on a vacation. So these guys were batching it for a week. Brian still is. John isn't anymore. So I know they were saying, oh, it's so lonely here without you. So we'll dedicate this to them, and then we'll be back probably with Mr. Dan Short. So keep your eye out for him.
Sounds good.
And we'll be back in a minute with more Motormouth Radio on 90.3 WHPC. Show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision, with two locations in Limbrook and Oceanside, who remind you that New York State law says you always have the right to choose which shop will fix your car. CarStar Celebrity Chase Collision offers a full range of services, 24-hour towing between Montauk and Manhattan, shuttle service, and they can help you with a rental car arrangement if needed. All repairs include the CarStar Lifetime Nationwide Warranty, ensuring that the experts at Celebrity Chase Collision are always on your side.
Y si hablamos español.
More information is available by calling 516-593-0920 or visiting online at celebritychasecollision.com.
You're listening to the Motor Mouth.
Oh.
You know them.
So nice talking to you guys. I miss you.
You love them.
I heard you talking about us, so I thought I'd call in.
Vote them out.
You want to serve dinner to them.
How you doing, guys? Sorry to interrupt.
How are you, Ray?
Chris is the sharpest drill bit, right?
This is the first time that I'm actually listening live and working on a car.
Our trained staff of two will help.
I'll call you back when I have the solution.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. That definitely points me in the right direction.
No, hold your breath. I hope you're sitting down.
Vote them out.
A tornado of urban legend and BS.
No,
I'm not going to wax my Johnson. I'm going to wax my Evan Rude.
As always, you are a consummate professional.
When I listen on my laptop, I got to keep that thing screaming. I don't mean to blow you up on the airwaves.
Quite frankly, there are better things to do with your time.
Oh, this is why I call wrong number by accident.
I want you all to know, sometimes I don't even wear pants.
I have no clue, and I can't hit it with a hammer to fix it.
Yeah, I want to know what the is wrong with my car.
So I got to give you guys a call and talk to you.
Motor mouth!
I'm in the car now.
They're going to talk about working on cars, but not going to work on yours.
There is no answer, and it makes you think, and I like the things that make you think.
What are you doing here?
I'm on break.
Okay, good. So are we.
There are answers, sometimes correct ones, and we may have them.
Motor Mouth Radio, 90.3 FM, WHBC.
Motor Mouth!
Got a car question? Give the Motor Mouths a call at 516-572-7440.
All right, we're back. Motor Mouth Radio. Hey, Chris.
All right.
We've completed our break duties.
Yeah, sorry you woke me.
Yeah, I know. That happens sometimes. It's you know what? Let's, just in case, let's do this. Let's go to the phones here and go to the fun. We'll say, okay. Hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, how are you? Dan.
Hey, Dan.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, very, very good. And I got to tell you, just by mentioning your name, just floods people like always. How's that guy doing? What's he up to? Damn, I miss his show. And and we agree. So,
well, actually, I was going to ask you guys because I've noticed a very interesting phenomenon since the outbreak of this pandemic. There are more and more and more demands for car builders. It's absolutely crazy that we can't keep up with the demand. The number of people requesting us to build cars has doubled to tripled in the last year alone. Are you guys seeing those sorts of responses up there where you guys are?
I'll say this. Yeah, there's stuff being done. I'm going to maybe preface what you said by saying there's a demand for competent and good and honest car builders, because I've seen a lot of the opposite, and unfortunately.
Dan, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that the fact is so few people know how to do this anymore that the word competent is an interesting word, because I got to tell you that so few people, whether you're interviewing people or just talking to them, that can even pick up a wrench and know which end that they're supposed to grab or which way to spin the bolt. And I'm not exaggerating. It's crazy.
Right.
I believe it. What kind of jobs are they asking you to, are they requesting you to do? Like full builds or?
Oh, yeah. We're getting 100 to 200 requests a month right now for full restorations. Wow. I mean, that's every month. And don't get me wrong, we were always getting, 50, 60, 70 a month, but there are months now we're getting over 200 requests a month. And I'm fairly convinced it has something to do with a combination of people not able to travel, so they're looking inward to those projects sitting in their garage. But the other part is, that there are so few shops that'll even consider taking on old cars because their technicians just don't understand them. I mean, what garage do you know that actually has a full staff of technicians today?
No, you're right. I've heard that over the years. People up here, I don't know how widespread the term is, but I had heard shop owners calling cars, like they said, no, we don't do restorations because you know you're going to find rust. And they just said these are collision shops. They want quick business. They want it, rightfully so. You want to get it in, do it, get it out, get paid.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Not everybody. Happen to have a large amount. How many square feet is your shop, Dan? You got a big place.
We're almost 60,000 square feet. Jeez. So, and what that does is let me tell you, you only want 1/3 of the shop actually turning things, because you need the other 2/3 of the shop just for the bodies you pull off the chassis, for the cars that are waiting parts. And by the way, these days, half the cars in my shop are waiting parts that are months out. That's the new phenomenon is, you know, I used to get seat covers just as an example. PUI is the manufacturer of most of the GM seat covers. Mm-hmm. And I used to, from the day I placed an order till the day I had them, it was 5 days, 7 days, 9 days. It's now 6 to 9 months.
Yeah.
For seat covers to arrive. Yeah, so days have turned to months in logistics and in building cars these days.
Right. And you have to store that car, you have to hold on to that car, you're responsible for that car, and you have to tell the client this. You have to give them
absolutely.
The John news.
Sure.
And you know, that is not the thing you want to do, because when you've got a car sitting around for 30 days or 60 days or longer waiting for parts, things can happen to that car, right? Mm. Batteries go dead, and God forbid, things like mice can get in. I mean, it's just insane.
Right.
It's a whole new world building cars these days because of the just the long, long waits for parts. You can't find people and you can't find parts.
You know, that I found out myself with stuff that I wanted to order for my own projects. Well, yeah, parts. I complain all the time. All right, there's a beef shortage. Now, lumber went up like crazy. You know, I need a part for a Grand National. Come on, it sits on a shelf. Like, what's the demand? I don't know.
Oh yeah, and look, I do a lot of work with the company called Heights. You know, they build a lot of the front ends, rear ends, suspension systems.
Yeah.
What they manufacture, they're keeping up with. But if you order a Heights, like an independent rear suspension system, what they don't have is the axles, because, you know, they're produced by Mosher or by Dana or someone else, and they can't even get the axles in these days. So even though some manufacturers are still producing at a full rate, the simple fact is their suppliers aren't giving the parts to them. So the shock waves are just huge. And I think that's also why a lot of these companies don't want to get into these bigger builds, because you end up with a car sitting in your shop for 6 months waiting for things.
Yeah.
I
know on this level here in New York, what I've seen, and I've talked to my friends who own shops and small business owners, so many people are out on unemployment and they're getting a government dole that they don't want to go back to work, so the people aren't available. And without going off on a tangent about that, because we could talk about that for a couple of days, I think that's up here. That's a big part of the problem. So
very true.
Oh, yeah. Look, I don't know how it's going to end. I'll just say one thing about it, because I think I agree we could spend a month talking about that subject alone. Mm. But a friend of mine who deals with employment in Florida, even though Florida, you know, DeSantis lifted the bans and everyone's supposed to be going back to work and they cut government money, he said 50% of the people are refusing to go back to work, even though they're not getting the government money, because they've just gotten so used to not working. And what you guys, and I think you guys get it, but the blue collar industry, the guys that turn the wrenches and fix the electrical systems and do tune-ups, they're the guys that got affected by it the most. Because let's face it, if you're making 50 grand a year turning wrenches and you can make 55, 60 grand a year just collecting unemployment, you ain't going back to work.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Very true.
It's a sad state. Off air, you had mentioned to me that you're back up to full capacity with your techs and mechanics. How many guys do you have working for you now, Dan?
Well, full capacity is a relative term.
Yeah.
I'm up to all the capacity I want.
Right. Okay.
Which for me is full capacity for me. Sorry, I just my wife pulled up in her car, jumped me over to Bluetooth.
Ah.
Full capacity to me is about 14 guys.
Okay.
And let me tell you, because, see, we were at one point at 35.
Right.
And I've given those days up, because I discovered 35 guys means 35 problems, and 14 guys just means 14 problems. So I would much rather deal with smaller numbers.
Well, now you have 14 happy guys. I know last time we had you on was right after the show went off the air, and you had mentioned that how trying it was on the guys who weren't on camera to have to work in that environment. So now I'm sure, I guess you have 14 happy guys, which is great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The morale of the shop is much, much better than it was. You know, it probably wouldn't make a lot of sense. And in fact, the guys from SEMA were just up. They did a 2-day interview at the shop because they're really trying to promote SEMA. And we did an interview that consisted of, you know, 8, 9, 10 hours of filming and interviews with the guys. You know, so it was kind of fun for them for just a moment to do something like that. But the reality is when the cameras were there every day, that the guys hated the cameras. The guys hated the conflicts. They hated dealing with the crew in some cases trying to goad them into saying things or doing things that they shouldn't do. And and so, yeah, life is so much better now that the cameras are gone. And it's ironic because if you talk to most builders and say, would you want to show, the overwhelming answer is yes. And I got to tell you, if I had an hour alone with that individual, I think their answer would be very different at the end of our conversation.
I was just talking with a shop owner the other day, and I mentioned that, you know, I was going to have you on Sunday, and I mentioned something that you had said to us last time you were on, where you said that just the little things that everybody takes for granted, like guys have radios and music in the shop, and everybody's radio had to be off when they filmed, and. Right. You know, the guys on camera weren't affected, but the guys who weren't on camera, like, well, now I can't listen to, you know, the Morning Talk Fest on my favorite. And now you have an unhappy employee. And just those little things that, you know, people don't think about are real.
Oh, and what about the fact that when one guy's on camera and another guy thinks he should have had a chance and he's jealous, so now he's pissed off, so... You can't even imagine how many of the guys would deliberately light up an air impact, you know, wrench right at the critical moment when an interview is right in the middle of it. They would do it deliberately, just to ruin somebody else's interview. And then the film crew would come to me, so-and-so did this, and then they'd come to me, hey, we hate the film crew. And, oh, it was just a lot of fun every day. So the good news is for me that... only recently we got back up to full staff. See, we lost a lot of our guys starting a year ago, and it hit a big nasty wave about 3 months ago. And I didn't think we were ever gonna get back to a good staff. But you know, I thank God things have turned around, and I would tell you I think we have as good a staff today as we've ever had, and overall things are going as well as they ever have. So life is good.
No, that's very good.
That's great news.
Well, you know, when everything rolls back and the TV crew is out, yeah, you can get back to that. You know, before I forget, we had a caller earlier in the show who asked if we could ask you what your favorite Mustang build was.
Yes.
Oh, actually, yeah, that's, I think, fairly easy. It was definitely not the SEMA Mustang. It was the one for Tim Collins. So if y'all remember, the baseball pitcher, from St. Louis, he came on the show, wanted a Mustang built, and not only was he a super reasonable guy, he wanted a very logical build, and we had a ton of fun doing his build for him. And then in the end, of course, he came out, and a bunch of kids were waiting, and we ended up going out and playing baseball with a group of kids in the local area. Nice. So not only was that my favorite Mustang build, it was actually probably one of my overall favorite builds. And for those of you who aren't a Tim Collins fan in baseball, you should be, because not only is he an awesome pitcher, he is just one of the greatest Americans you'll ever meet. So real, real good man.
I remember one of the ones we talked about when you did the early one, you changed the guts from the a hardtop over to a convertible and the engine and the suspension. That was a lot of work. But there was a red one you did that went, what was it, in South America? I think the fellow was down south of the border.
Yeah, you're talking about the California special that we dropped the coyote in.
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah, and here's the irony. Today, I will no longer do coyotes, and people are coming up to me with Fords asking for LS conversions. So don't hate me for that, for those of you who are Ford fans. But the reality is LS is fit so much better than coyotes that there's a lot of people putting Chevy powertrains in Fords just because Ford decided to make the coyote so darn big. It barely fits in anything. But yeah, that was an interesting build. Great client. They were really, really decent the entire time. But I no longer will do a coyote. They're just so tough to do.
I tell you, besides probably making our Mother's Day show, I'm going to use that information on the Thursday night show that I do, the Plane and Traffic show, because we have an LS guy, and everybody busts his chops. Terry, Coverman at 66, and they're always busting his chops about coyotes and all. So I think that's going to be a little fodder for this, this week's fun for me. You know, Dan, yeah. How... You
now,
know,
now, let me yeah. throw a plug to Ford. Mm-hmm. The Coyote is a magnificent motor, and once you've, you know, cut the car, once you've cut two-thirds of the metal out of the car and you've actually got the car put together, the Coyote is amazing. I mean, when you hit that pedal, you understand why Ford went through all they did to create that overhead cam motor. Mm-hmm. But it's just so much work to put one in that, and by the way, they're double the price of an LS by the time you get them in easily. So, wow. So yeah, as much as I love Ford, and as far as I'm concerned, Henry Ford is the single greatest pioneer in the automotive world, I still have to go to Chevy and the LSs, even in the case of throwing one into a Mustang.
Right. You know, well, that's the thing. They, yeah, they are huge. They are huge. And they don't have the aftermarket support like the LSs do either. There's not as big of a support.
No.
So, you know.
No, there's... Mm-hmm. For every 10 parts you can get for an LS, you might be lucky to get one for a Coyote.
Yeah, yeah. Someone else had asked me to ask you, how did you get into car building this deeply and heavily, and you know, on the total deconstruction and reconstruction level? That's because it's above and beyond.
Well, and the irony is that the first shop I ever worked in was Phantom Works that I created. So I had never, and I literally mean this, never worked in a garage for 1 minute prior to creating Phantom Works and deciding that the only way to do it was to blow them into a million pieces and build them back up. I don't know. I think, you know, there are just some people with that gene that it's all about the deconstruction and the reconstruction. And for me... you know, that was just something that it's sort of like there's no point jumping into a shallow pool. Just go for the deepest trench in the ocean you can when you first dive in. And that's really what it was. It was a learning process. And just to put in perspective how much learning, the first project we ever did, first full reconstruction, which was in the first month we opened our shop, we started it. I bid the project out at $40,000. We ended up spending well over $100,000 to do it. So, I mean, wow. I lost, you know, 60, 70 grand on the build. And I sort of licked my wounds on that one and went, I shouldn't probably be that stupid if I keep doing this. And so we managed to lose a little bit less money with each subsequent one we did. But let me tell you, a lot of learning in the beginning, a lot.
That's a good business model, you know, to tell people, make sure you lose less as you go forward.
Right.
Well, you know, the rule. How do you make your first $1 million building cars?
You got to spend $3 million.
Right.
To start with $2 million. Yeah, exactly.
Right,
so,
exactly.
So, and let me tell you, that's the model I followed.
Right. Yeah.
How do you devote the time? How do you compute or calculate the time it takes to totally take a vehicle apart and put it back together again? How do you, I know you're explaining there was a lot of loss there, but what do? How do you calculate that?
Well, you know, the thing you got to do is you got to start with a gut check, unfortunately. But I mean, I if you remember from the show, you always saw me under a car with a flashlight. And let me tell you, I do that with every single car that comes in. I don't care if it's right. just coming in for a power steering conversion. I'm spending an hour and a half, 2 hours looking at a car because mm-hmm. I need to understand, you know, if a car's got rust all over it and chopped up wires and everything else, you know, everything's going to cost more because the individual hasn't taken care of the car and you're going to have to fight, you know, 40, 50 years worth of corrosion. On the other hand, if it's in fairly good shape, you know, you're going to be on the lower end of the spectrum of whatever you're going to have to do. But the reality is I don't do estimates. They are impossible to do. So what I do is I look at a car. I have a gut check, and generally speaking, at the risk of sounding a bit smug, my gut checks are about 90% accurate. Mm-hmm. But at that point, I ask the individual what their budget is. And they're going to give me one of three numbers. They're going to give me a number below my number, at my number, or above it, right? Mm-hmm. And, right? And if their number is below or at my number, I say, I can't help you with this project. They have to give me a number greater than what I think it's going to be, because even though, like, let's just say I think it's going to cost $100,000 to build this car. If they give me a number of 100 or less, then I've got no room for any extras, no room for anything that we haven't found yet. And so at that point, I say, thank you, but no. No, thank you. If they give me a number of at least 25% higher than what I have in my mind, then and only then do I take on the project. And that way I got a little bit of coverage.
Yeah. You know, like you said, when you assess a car and by what you can see, I've seen it on your show alone many times where, you know, one of the guys will call you over and say, Dan, look at this. The floor looked, it was undercoated, looked okay. And once he pulled the stuff away, there was newspapers and chicken wire. And, you know, they just Band-Aid a pig to make it look right to sell the thing. And it's like, great, now the whole floor is coming out of the car. We didn't expect this, you know.
Absolutely. Look, by the way, I'm about 30 seconds from my no-sell coverage, so I'm going to try and get through as quick as I can. But my favorite example of being duped was when a man brought me in a floor completely crafted from sculpting foam. I mean, somebody had spent 20 hours sculpting every room thing out of sculpting foam, and I didn't go shove a screwdriver through it because it looked magnificent. I should have shoved a screwdriver through it and I would have found nothing but styrofoam.
Right. Yep. Oh, wow. My word, that's ridiculous.
So there's an irony. You would be amazed at how much people will spend not to do things right.
Oh yeah. Well, I always say if people were half as crafty in learning how to, you know, do something the right way or learn a technique as they are in how to botch it up and just get it out the door, foobar the thing, you know, we'd have a lot better, we'd see a lot better cars and motorcycles and boats out there, but, and houses too, you know.
Yeah, you know, to spend 10 hours to save $50 makes zero sense at all, yet you will find that all the time.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing.
It's true. And I hate to say it, there have been times I've actually done it too. So I totally understand. I totally get it. Dan, has there ever been a car that has come in through your shop where you just say, this isn't worth it? Like, I mean, a vehicle that still is in good shape and everything looks and appears the way it should, yet you still turn it away and go, it's not worth anything? Like, has someone showed up with like a four-door Valiant Signet or something and wanted it done and you just
actually, they did.
Away?
He did do a Valiant early on. It was a four-door. And the guy,
oh,
it was,
really?
Yeah, I remember that car.
Well, I missed that one.
Yeah, so it's all about the love of the owner.
Yeah.
Hang on.
There was a family connection to the car, I think, where the guy.
Yeah, I guess that would probably be there.
And he wanted to, you know, Bobby from the Olds Club here is doing that now. He's helping a guy, has a four-door Olds F85, and it was a base model, but it was his grandfather's car. So the guy's putting a lot of money into a restoration that you would never do otherwise, because. Yeah, who would?
Yeah, so it's all about the love. And now, but even like I've had guys that love their cars and I've still said no. And an example would be, and I'm probably going to step on a lot of toes, would be anything built in the 80s.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
There's virtually nothing built in the 80s that that you can make a business case for. And let me tell you how loose my business case is. I tell every client that comes in that if I can't build their car and after it's built, if they can't sell it for at least 50% of what we put in it, then it's a bad business model. Now, you know, a lot of people think you can get 100% of your money out. Well, good luck with that. I want to meet the guy that can build cars and get all of his money back out of them.
Right.
But if you can build cars and get 50% of your money out, you're in good shape. And the irony is that a 1980s car, as a rule, you're barely going to see 10 cents on the dollar once they're built. That's about all they'll generally bring.
Yeah.
So that's why if it was built anywhere in the 80s at all, I just say there's just no point in even thinking about it.
And there's only a very few 80s cars that are even worth putting any kind of time into anyway that were, you know, halfway collectible. So, but then, yeah, that's coming up because as the population ages, you know, people want what they had in high school. But I think we've talked about it on this show many times. The 80s and 90s cars, I think that the logjam is going to be the electronics, the modules, the computers, stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely. And well, there's two things, the electronics and the plastics.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if you look at the number of plastics put into an 80s car, and by the way, 90% of it is not in production either. Mm. So now you've got a plastic piece that, remember, the 90s happened, they started 32 years ago, roughly.
Right.
So, yeah. You know, when you think about a car that's now 30 years old, the plastic on it has decayed and is coming apart, and you got to try and make that thing function again, and then you got to deal with the electronics, you very quickly get to the point where you realize there is no way you can do it and just not lose your tail on the job. So it's better to just say, you know what, I'm just going to pass on this one. And let me tell you, I make a lot of people angry when I tell them that I can't make a business case for building their car. They get real pissed off.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, because it's an emotional thing. Well, Dale, we're getting close to the end of our show. If you can tell people how they can find you, not on your voicemail, though. That's not a good idea. But because people want to connect with you and you know, social media or any or and what's coming down the road in the future for you that people may want to know.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, if they've ever seen the show and they can spell Phantom Works, of course, everybody, it's ironic, people still try and spell it with a PHANTOM, right. But it's an F. So if you just spell Phantom Works with an F, look, we've got our shop number on the website. We've got a website. I'm actually pretty easy to find, and what is interesting is when I hear people say, you know, we couldn't figure out how to locate you. It's like, man, Stevie Wonder could find me in a crowded room, you know.
Right,
so,
right.
So I'm pretty easy to find. But yeah, we're still alive. We're still well. I love coming on your show. It's actually a lot of fun to do this. So good, just have a few minutes to chat about cars. And hey, so if there is one thing out there I can say to the listeners, hey, keep turning wrenches and teaching your sons and your daughters how to turn wrenches, because let me tell you, I don't think we have any shortage of people that can work on computers, but we have a severe shortage of anyone who can turn a wrench. So that's going to be where the money is made in the future. I'm fairly convinced of it.
Right.
Wow.
Well, thank you, Dan. And with that, we're going to have to wrap because we have another show coming in. We got to go. We'll keep in touch. I'll bug you from time to time. We'll get you back on and keep you in the loop. And we thank you for coming on with us today.
Absolutely. All the best. Have a good one, guys.
All right, Dan. Thanks.
Thank you, Dan. Bye. Thanks.
All right, that was Mr. Dan Short from Phantom Works. Check them out; they're still on TV and reruns.
Yes,
and
no, it was good to hear what Dan thought about how it's going and how he feels about it in the future. The way cars are
right
is what we expect in the future is not really good. They'll be restoring the same 60s and 50s cars for the rest of our lives, I guess.
And the future for us is now. We're done. So, Chris, we got to get out of here. What do we always say to people?
Don't follow us home and don't try and restore your 80s vehicles.
Right, we'll be back next week with more Motormouth Radio and fireworks. For Chris Switzer, Ray Guarino, see you next week.
Bye. See you, bye.